The current coronavirus pandemic has done much to change the way many of us eat to live. Many of us now rely on others, in fact, to deliver food right to our very front door. And that leads us to ask, for whom is Amazon delivering food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1247th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Sydney who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, the ways in which we eat to live have been changing really quickly over the past few months. A few months ago, we shopped for food at supermarkets where we found everything we wanted and much more than we anticipated buying. And because we were always so busy and a bit starved for conviviality, we dined out a lot, a whole lot. But the Made in China virus changed most everything for us and did so quickly. We pretty much lost all of our footing and found ourselves scrambling around for what to do. It's sheltering in place, oh my goodness. And so after months of being hunkered down, we've crafted new ways of feeding ourselves. We now eat at home a lot more than we did last year, boy, that's for sure. And much of the food that we eat at home is delivered right to our front door. Though very convenient, that food in a box sitting on the front stoop does come with a price, which is reflected in Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in our food. And get this from the folks at the Center for Science and Public Interest. Amazon is pushing unhealthy food and beverages on us. And so today we pause to ask, for whom does Amazon deliver food? Here to help us find an answer, we have Emily Snyder, who is a senior policy associate for the Center for Science in the Public Interest. Emily, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, good to have you aboard. Well, that's quite an assertion that you folks made. I got it in a press release, and I thought, holy smokes. An assertion that Amazon would be pushing unhealthy food and beverages on us. So that's a fun thing to pick up today. First, let's start with the Center for Science in the Public Interest. What exactly is the center?
The Center for Science in the Public Interest, or CSPI for short, is America's food and health watchdog. Many people know CSPI as the organization that blew the whistle on just how unhealthy movie theater popcorn is. What a lot of people don't know is that CSPI is also the organization that led efforts to get the Nutrition Facts Panel on packaged foods to eliminate artificial trans fat from the food supply and to put calorie counts on chain restaurant menus and menu boards. CSPI accepts no government or corporate grant funds, and this preserves our independence in advocating to improve the food system to support healthy eating. To learn more about CSPI, you can visit us on our website, which is cspinet.org.
Very good, Emily. But if you don't accept money from the government or industry, who do you accept your money from? Because somebody has to pay the way.
That's right. CSPI is largely funded by our members, which include subscribers to our Nutrition Action Health Letter, and also we are funded by foundation grants.
Okay, good enough. And Emily is a senior policy analyst. And what kind of senior policies do you analyze?
At CSPI, I co-lead our healthy retail work. The goal with that work is to transform the supermarket environment to promote health. And we're aiming to transform both the brick-and-mortar supermarket environment and also the online grocery shopping environment, such as on Amazon's platforms.
Well, you know, as an observer of how we get our food, it certainly has changed. How would you describe the change that's been forced upon us, I guess, as it were, over the past few months, Emily?
So that's a terrific question. Grocery stores have played a central role in people's lives in the United States for decades. And as you mentioned, they have never played a larger role than during the pandemic. As people have been eating out at restaurants less frequently, and many restaurants have been closed, been forced to close or provide takeout or delivery only. And with that increase in grocery shopping has been a huge surge in online grocery shopping as people have chosen to order groceries from the safety of their own homes.
Well, and what has been the impact of the grocery stores themselves on the disruption caused by COVID? I know that there has been significant impact, for example, in the meat industry, because of the consolidation of the industry into a few places with large processing facilities and in need of a lot of workers. Have you seen any other disruptions, Emily?
Well, so during the pandemic, supermarkets have really been forced to take on new responsibilities. And today their job isn't only to keep us fed, but it's also to keep us safe. And so grocery stores, a little bit slow out of the starting blocks, but more recently, they've scrambled to put in policies that prevent consumers and workers from contracting the coronavirus at their stores. And they've done this while also facing labor shortages and supply chain challenges. And CSPI is encouraging grocery stores, the places where Americans get most of their food, to rethink their roles. And as they take on new responsibilities to protect the public's health, to think even bigger than the coronavirus. Supermarkets have immense power over America's diet, and that has room for improvement. Imagine if grocery stores promoted fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and other healthy foods in the same way that they're currently pushing unhealthy food like soda, chips, and candy on grocery shoppers.
Well, let's stop there and talk about the ways in which the supermarkets themselves encourage us to make certain purchases. We've all heard that the smartest shoppers shop around the store and not in the middle of the store. But that's just where it starts, right?
Right. And I'd like to talk about the supermarket environment a bit. And, you know, many shoppers go to the supermarket and they think that it's a neutral space. They think, you know, they go in with their list or without the list. They load up their shopping cart, they check out, they go home, and, you know, they've left with the products that they thought they wanted to buy. But in fact, food companies, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Nestle, other big brands, these food and beverage manufacturers pay retailers, which are the grocery stores and supermarkets where we get most of our food, they pay them more than $50 billion each year to promote their products in the store. And they do that through prominent and frequent placement of the products, through pricing strategies, and through other aggressive promotion strategies. And this influences the foods and drinks that shoppers buy for themselves and for their families.
So, Emily, if Emily and Michael decided to start a new cola brand and take it to a big supermarket chain and say, we have a brand new cola brand and it tastes much better than Coca-Cola, what would the supermarket tell us?
You know, this rigged retail system that we have here in the United States, it's not a good one for farmers and for small food makers who don't have the big marketing budgets that these big food and beverage manufacturers have. And in fact, it is very challenging for small food companies to get their products on supermarket shelves. It can cost a lot of money just to get a placement in a major supermarket in the United States.
So it's almost like supermarkets have become advertising companies in a very real way, because the food manufacturers that have the economies of scale sufficient to buy the promotions, buy the shelf space, are in effect buying advertising as well. Because if we were to go to a supermarket chain, they might give us a place way back in the South 40 on a single little shelf in the bottom of the shelf or something, and Coca-Cola would be right there in the front of the store, in front of everybody, with a bright sign. And so tough to compete with that, right?
It's exactly right that the stores have become marketing agents for these products. And in fact, food and beverage companies spend twice as much now on promoting their products in stores than they do on traditional advertising, which has been a change that we've seen as, you know, over the last several decades.
So it's easier to talk to somebody when they're actually hungry and shopping for food than when they're sitting in front of the television at night, well fed with the evening meal, probably.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you bring up that point. And this brings me back to the online retail. And online grocery retail is really a space that has the opportunity to present healthy options for shoppers and, you know, increase purchase and consumption of healthy options. And part of that is because shoppers aren't wandering the aisles being exposed to these foods sometimes many, many times throughout the course of their grocery shopping trip. But also because research, evidence, data shows that when people are looking at a picture of the product, such as on an online platform, that doesn't necessarily trigger the same desire as if they see the actual product in a store. So it's a shame that online retailers are pushing unhealthy food on online grocery shoppers in such a way when these online platforms really could be an opportunity to promote health among people in the United States.
Yeah, it's understandable, but going back to the supermarket, what kind of food do supermarkets really want us to buy? It must have something to do with the margins, correct?
Well, that's an interesting point, and supermarkets largely promote the products that they are receiving money for from these food and beverage manufacturers. That's the $50 billion a year that they receive from these companies. And most of those products are unhealthy products. And so those are the products that consumers do purchase. And we know that this type of in-store marketing works, because if it didn't influence consumer purchasing habits, then the food and beverage companies wouldn't be spending $50 billion a year to do this.
When you say unhealthy, I think of unhealthy foods a number of different ways. One, they could be contaminated with toxic residues of some kinds, like pesticides and whatnot. But another way they could be unhealthy is if they simply do not have much nutritional value. They could be, that's what I consider cheap food to be, is food with very little nutritional value. So you take something that has very little nutritional value and bake it up into something yummy with putting a lot of sugar in it. Is that what you mean by unhealthy foods as well?
That's exactly right. By unhealthy foods, I'm talking about foods with a lot of added sugar, a lot of fat, particularly saturated fat, a lot of salt, and with little nutrition in them.
Okay, good enough. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Today we're talking about the different ways we've come to get our food now. My goodness, it shows up at the front porch in a box, and pretty soon at the end of the week we have 50 boxes to get rid of. My goodness, it's crazy. But it is the way we're doing things these days, and a lot of it's coming from Amazon. And Amazon is said to be selling bad food. So let's take on Amazon when we get back from this break with Emily Snyder from the CSPI. Right back.
Now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yes, we are back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson with Emily Snyder, Senior Policy Associate with the Center for Science in the Public Interest. Folks, we've been talking a little bit about the changes brought by the COVID virus. Boy, what a big change it's been. A lot of us are stuck at home, spending a lot more time at home. So at least we can have a home-cooked meal once in a while, if not all the time these days. And that's affected a change in the way we eat. We're actually making food now instead of eating out all the time. But we're also ordering food in. And in fact, we're ordering our groceries in now. It's coming in boxes from far off distances. And what's in those boxes? Now, my family has been doing that and most satisfied with some of the meats that we've been getting, which is what we've been getting online. But so much more is available online. You can order toothpaste online now. And we ran across a real interesting comment from the Center for the Science in Public Interest. And a press release came out, and they said, and I quote, "Amazon is pushing unhealthy food and beverages on us." Now, Emily Snyder, why would Amazon be doing that?
So Amazon is pushing unhealthy food on its online grocery shoppers, as you mentioned. And CSPI conducted a study that just came out this past year that found out that the ways that Amazon is doing that is by promoting unhealthy products on its home pages. It is also promoting unhealthy products in the emails that it sends to its online grocery shoppers after they have already ordered their groceries. And also Amazon, when a shopper types in a food that they want, like chicken, for example, a staple food, another example would be cereal, milk, bread, or drinks, 60% of the products that are featured in the search results were unhealthy. And one of the reasons that online retailers promote these products on their online platforms is because food companies are paying them to promote their products.
So it's the same thing they've been doing with the supermarket industries. Worked really good there, so why not online as well? And that's how the online companies are making some of their money too, once it's spec. So you talk about promotion on online. So what kind of promotions do food manufacturers sponsor through these online retailers like Amazon?
So there are a lot of ways that food and beverage companies push their products on online grocery platforms. One of those is through promotions of the products on the various web pages on the online platforms. And that includes the home page, it includes search results pages, and it includes the checkout page. Products are also promoted through email to shoppers after they have bought products from the online grocery platform. Another big way that food companies promote their products on online platforms is through pricing deals. Buy, you know, 2 for the price of 1 or 10 for $10. And a third strategy that food companies use to promote their products that I wanted to point out is this prominent placement, and that is high placement in the search results when somebody searches for a particular product.
So it sounds like the online platforms are just about exactly the same thing as this going into the supermarket then. Because, you know, with respect to promotions, you walk into a supermarket and you see a display there, Coca-Cola, 50% off. Well, you buy Coca-Cola, right? And that's what you see when you open up a web page, Coca-Cola, or 50% off, or whatever. There's the product right in front of you, and all you have to do is click, and it's yours. And it comes to your front door.
That's exactly right. These trade promotion practices that have happened in brick-and-mortar stores for years have migrated onto online grocery platforms. And as there's been a surge in online grocery shopping during the pandemic, food companies and retailers are scrambling to be sure that they have the strategies in place to trigger impulse purchases by shoppers in the same ways that they do in grocery stores, because they need for the shopping carts on online grocery platforms to be just as big as the shopping carts would be in the grocery store, where there are all of these prompts and repeated exposures to foods around the grocery store.
Now, have you folks looked at the difference in impulse buying between supermarkets and online? Has anybody looked at that? Is there any way to measure that?
What we do know is that there is impulse purchasing prompted by in-store marketing in grocery stores, and that same kind of impulse purchasing is happening on online grocery platforms. And the kinds of ways that it happens on online shopping is by these product promotions, these splashy snapshots and pop-ups and banner ads on the top, bottom, and sides of the web pages. Also by quite targeted marketing, like popular snacks near where you live, or, you know, perhaps past purchases. Did you want to buy this again? And all of these things trigger impulse purchasing on online grocery platforms in a similar way that the checkout aisle prompts impulse purchases in grocery stores.
But with one difference, I think, and that would be when I'm in a checkout line at the grocery store and I look over and there's all this chocolate. And it's right there. And I can have that satisfaction of that chocolate right now. But online, I have to wait a day or two for the chocolate to show up at my front door. I know that has an impact on me because I'm less likely to make that impulse buy if I can't have that, satisfy that impulse right away. But maybe not so much others?
Well, I think that's right. And actually, that very concept has food companies a little panicked. For example, Hershey's has developed a whole bunch of strategies for making sure that impulse purchases of its candy products continue on online grocery platforms. And an example of a way that they are doing that is by suggesting that when a shopper has baking items in their cart, a pop-up happens to ask them, are they sure they don't want chocolate chips?
That would work for my wife. it's a good prompt. And I guess that's why they call them prompt, right? It's prompts. It's that, here, we're going to help you make this decision. And that I guess that's what the science of food merchandising is all about with respect to online. But we all must eat. We all must get the food. And the food has to come from somewhere. And we're a long, long ways from the sources of our food. So we have to make decisions about what food to get. And I'd like to talk a little bit about how online people like Amazon, how they go about describing what kinds of foods we should eat. Because you folks at CSPI made mention of the pushing of food, which denotes that, you know, they're encouraging us to eat one kind of food as over another kind of food. Is it simply a matter of who pays them the most is that gets the placement and gets the prompts? Is that how it works?
Well, we do know that sponsorship fees for products can get prime placement on online platforms in search results and on other web pages, the same way it happens in the grocery stores. What is a huge missed opportunity on online grocery platforms is this opportunity to present healthy items for shoppers as opposed to these unhealthy options that show up in search results when somebody searches for a staple food like the ones I mentioned earlier, chicken, bread, milk, drink, cereal.
And you look at Amazon and say, you have the opportunity to do good, but you're not doing good. So we're going to encourage you to do better. And one of the things I know that that you have seen in Amazon's merchandising efforts is that they tend to sell bad food to good people who don't have much money.
Well, we do know that Amazon is pushing unhealthy food on all of its online grocery shoppers. And we also know that grocery stores that serve low-income families can make it much more difficult for people to make healthy food choices. And an example of this is that stores that serve low-income neighborhoods promote more sugary beverages, so soda is the big example, during the period when the state issues SNAP benefits. And SNAP is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which was formerly known as food stamps. And this kind of targeted promotion is particularly predatory on online grocery platforms where it may entrench health disparities. And, you know, this kind of targeted online marketing could have the most consequential effects on people who are already at a high risk for diet-related disease, including low-income customers. And you know, the really personalized data that manufacturers and retailers are able to collect on these online platforms enables them to recommend specific foods and beverages that take advantage of individual vulnerabilities.
Wow. So what you're saying is that given the information gathering capabilities of online platforms, they know who you are. They know how much money you make, and they know what kind of foods to pitch to you. So what they're doing is identifying low-income people in disadvantaged neighborhoods and going after them with bad food. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the point that you just made is that there is emerging evidence that suggests that when machine learning predicts user response to ads, the technology can define user groups by income or race, even when the information is not provided. And so this ability to really specifically target people is possible on online grocery platforms. And online grocery platforms have this wonderful potential to reduce food access barriers. But the limited data privacy requirements and this really sophisticated e-commerce marketing can open people up to a totally new form of targeted marketing that will expose many people to unhealthy food and beverages.
How would you go about targeting disadvantaged people with good food? I mean, if you were in charge of Amazon.
So one of the things that CSPI is urging online retailers to do, including Amazon, is to only use purchase history information and geographic information of its shoppers to promote healthy foods. These sites, including Amazon, have features of, like popular near you types of ads or prompts, and we're really encouraging sites like Amazon and other online grocers to use those to promote the healthy products to people.
And do supermarkets and online grocers make the same amount of money selling healthy foods as unhealthy foods?
You know, there's a lot of debate about whether healthy food or unhealthy food is more expensive, and various, you know, you can look at the issue from a variety of different ways. You can look at the cost per calorie, the cost for weight, the weight of the food, the cost for a serving of the food, and different studies show different results. There was a study out of Harvard a few years ago that showed it costs on average $1.50 to eat the most healthy diet, $1.50 more, I should say, to eat the most healthy diet compared to the least healthy diet. But what we do know is that grocery store environments, both brick and mortar and online, do push unhealthy food on people, and there is evidence that this food is being pushed on low-income communities, through this study that I mentioned that was done related to sugar-sweetened beverages. And I think more research needs to be done in this area to understand these kinds of targeted marketing practices, both in supermarkets and on online platforms, so that we can understand what is happening in those spaces.
And wow, it's very, very, very sophisticated marketing to people who probably aren't quite that sophisticated in their purchasing decisions. I'm hungry for this, and that looks best, and so that's what I'll buy. But I have Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't. I think cheap food actually costs more than maybe expensive food in many instances, like the examples that you just mentioned. But it seems as though cheap food makes more money than good food for the both the supermarket world and the online world. It's just a simple fact that they can make more money selling cheap food than they can expensive food. Has there been any studies on that? On just that dynamic right there?
You know, in 2016, CSPI commissioned an investigative journalist who wrote a report called Rigged: Supermarket Shelves for Sale. And that report details these trade promotion practices, that $50 billion that food companies pay to grocery stores every year to promote their products, and really undercovers just how much money supermarkets are making off of these companies who pay them to promote mostly unhealthy products. And, you know, the system is rigged, and farmers and smaller, better for you companies promoting better for you products have a very hard time making it in the
competing
large grocery stores.
And we're going to have to take a quick break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Emily from CSPI, Emily Snyder, and you. When we get back, we're going to talk about how we can convince Amazon and other online retailers, and maybe even supermarkets too, to sell good food instead of bad food. This is the Food Chain, right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, the current coronavirus pandemic has done so much to change the way we eat to live. Boy, our family has gone through a change, and I'm sure yours has to some extent or another, too. And right now, by golly, so much of our food is showing up on our front door in boxes and with all iced up and everything, and it's amazing. It comes from far, far away, and there it is on our front porch. However, some say, and some being the Center for Science in the Public Interest, are suggesting that those people who sell us that food have a lot of reason to sell us food that isn't so good for us. And so we're trying to come to grips with why they do it. Well, they do it to make money, of course, but what we could do to get around that. And in that regard, I'm reminded of a story that I very recently heard from a friend, an associate, who purchased 27,000 dollars worth of Amazon stock. And today, that stock is worth $1.2 million, which leads me to believe that Amazon.com is one very successful money-making company. And so when we look to them and look at ways of convincing them that they should inject a little bit of ethics into the way they do business, we wonder if they'll actually listen to us. Emily, do you think they'll listen to us?
You know, CSPI is asking for food retailers, including Amazon, as the institutions that provide most of the food to people in the United States, to rethink their roles. And prompted by the COVID-19 pandemic and the importance of grocery stores in the lives of all of the families in the United States and individuals in the United States, CSPI is asking for retailers to step up and do more than protect shoppers from the coronavirus, to help us eat healthier by promoting fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and other healthy products instead of the soda, chips, candy, and other unhealthy foods that are so frequently promoted to customers in grocery stores and on online grocery sites.
You know, the thought of convincing people like Jeff Bezos to adopt an altruism to replace their capitalism, I think, is a noble effort, but one doomed to failure, simply by virtue of, you know, that's what they do, is that they make money, and that's all they think about. So I wonder, what if instead of trying to talk them into doing something that I don't think they want to do, what about talking consumers into taking better care of themselves? I mean, which do you think would be most difficult to talk into, Emily?
So I think it's a terrific question and would offer another point of view, and that is that CSPI is working with food retailers and with researchers to better understand the business case for promoting healthy foods and to determine what is the right mix of healthy products that will be positive for these retailers' bottom lines. Because we know that people in the United States want to eat healthy, they want to feed their families well, and retailers have struggled to figure out how they can meet that consumer demand for healthy food and meet the bottom line. So CSPI is very interested to work with retailers and with researchers to study this very issue. And, you know, the other thing that you asked about was this issue of personal responsibility and food choice. And so we're not saying that it's all Amazon's fault, but Amazon makes it harder to eat healthy. And, you know, we're asking them to help us eat healthier. And, you know, in this environment, this food environment that we're in, and the way that the supermarket is rigged to promote these products, many of which are unhealthy, you know, this issue of consumer choice, you know, it might not be so much choice after all.
Well, asking Jeff Bezos, you know, to do a better job of helping people decide on eating healthy food. You know, I think about, well, if you were to transfer that to a supermarket, wouldn't that be like asking the supermarket manager to move that those shelves of candy bars next to the cash register out to the back of the store somewhere?
Well, I think we need to better understand the business case for these healthy items in grocery stores. And that's why we really need some grocery retailers to step forward and run pilots and make changes and evaluate those changes and figure out what is the right mix of healthy products that will be positive for the bottom line. And another key thing to point out here is that what CSPI is asking of food retailers is not to eliminate products or choice in the grocery store, but instead to keep those unhealthy products in their aisles where they belong, instead of in repeated displays and on end of aisle shelves and on at checkout all around the store, so that if soda is on your shopping list, you can go right down the soda aisle and grab the soda. But if soda isn't on your shopping list, you don't have to be prompted by soda at the entrance, on the end of aisle shelves, you know, in various other displays, and then again at the checkout aisle.
You know, I remember a lesson from grade school, which, given my age, is quite a feat. But way back then, my third grade teacher brought a bottle of Coca-Cola to class, and she set it there on her desk, and she left it there. And of course, all of us kids watched that bottle of Coca-Cola for a long time until one of our teeth fell out. At which time, Mrs. Solberg was her name, borrowed the tooth from the child and opened the bottle of Coca-Cola. And she dropped that tooth into the Coca-Cola, and we watched as it fizzed up and was being dissolved. And that one little lesson stuck with me my entire life, and I've never been a soda pop drinker because of that, I think. And I just wonder if we couldn't do better, instead of trying to talk people like Jeff Bezos into making less money, if we couldn't talk consumers, rich, poor, middle class alike, into making better decisions for themselves, better taking more responsibility for themselves. Emily?
Well, one of CSPI's goals is to educate consumers about healthy eating and about healthy food. And there are strategies that shoppers can use that encourage the purchase of healthy products around the store. A big one that I use is making a shopping list and then sticking to the shopping list, so as to avoid impulse purchases of unhealthy foods around the stores. But it is going to be very hard for people in the United States to use personal responsibility to exercise personal responsibility to make healthy choices in this food environment where we have food companies spending $50 billion a year to promote unhealthy food and beverages. And, you know, outside of the supermarket environment, there is food everywhere. You go to Bed Bath & Beyond and the checkout is stacked with movie theater size candy boxes, and that's not even a food store. So, you know, everywhere that we turn, there's prompts for more food. And I think we really need to change the food environment in order to change the way that people eat in the United States.
Well, that's certainly true. Maybe it's a combination of both. Maybe I was just thinking if somebody were to do a television, a PSA television commercial with that bottle of Coca-Cola and the tooth dissolving in it, that would change a lot of minds. But who would do that? Because, you know, the soft drink industry is huge and it has incredible amounts of money. And, you know, you look at Jeff Bezos, he owns the Washington Post and probably a significant percentage of the people who are on Capitol Hill. So how do you compete with them and convince them to do better, to treat their customers with more respect, which is what you're asking, is it not?
It is. And the other key player here is policymakers and the role for policymakers and the responsibility for policymakers to create an environment in the United States that enables people to purchase and consume foods that are healthy for them. And CSPI is calling on the United States Department of Agriculture to issue some guidance for food retailers that sell their products online to SNAP participants to provide guidance about how to promote healthy foods and not unhealthy foods, how to price healthy foods competitively, and, you know, a variety of other guidances that would move retailers more toward promoting healthy foods and away from promoting unhealthy foods.
You know, at the beginning of the broadcast, you made mention of how the Center for Science in the Public Interest was responsible for the nutrition panels on the back of food, for which I am most grateful because I'm one of those people who actually read them and are guided by them. But in that regard, what if we had a labeling of food, 1 to 5, with 1 being bad food and 5 being good food? Has anybody ever thought of something like, I mean, we have all kinds of certification agencies. You know, people certify organic and people certify sustainable and certify, you know, range fed. They certify everything. So what if somebody like CSPI were to put together a grading system, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F. This food is an F. It flunks. Go away. Don't buy it. Now, you think that would be a possibility?
Well, there are some grocery stores that use similar strategies. There's one large grocery chain in the United States that uses a stars rating system of 1 to 3 stars to rank foods for their healthfulness. And I do think that those kinds of programs in stores can help direct people toward the products in the stores that are healthy. Unfortunately, in stores that have these kind of systems in place, the majority of foods being sold in the stores don't match the criteria for the star system.
Yeah, as soon as I made mention of that idea, I thought of how much money could be made taking bribes to get the best ratings, right? Because I'm sure that would happen as well. And it's kind of brought. So where do we go from here, Emily? The Centers for Science in the Public Interest. And, you know, perhaps if you could use science somehow to convince the Jeff Bezos of the world to be kinder and more considerate of the people they're selling food to, maybe science would convince them, but I don't think so.
Well, one thing that listeners could do today is go to CSPINet.com. jeffbezos.org/Amazon and send an email to Jeff Bezos asking him to create responsible food marketing guidelines for his online grocery platforms. And, you know, that would be a step that listeners could take to help us move toward healthier items on Amazon.
Do you think Jeff Bezos would do a 1-to-5 rating system for on food? Do you think he would have...
It's an interesting concept. And, you know, in the same way that that unhealthy products are promoted on online grocery platforms, promoting healthy products with a special label or a special tag on online grocery platforms would also help direct online shoppers to the healthy items that are available. Another way that this could be done is by simply having healthy items appear near the top of search results when a customer types in the product that they're looking for.
But then that would interfere with getting paid to be listed first, which would go against the basic rule of making money. But it occurs to me, Emily, that if an outfit like Amazon were to actually establish a 1-to-5 rating system for its food, to say this food rated number 1 or F is bad for you, go ahead and buy it, but it's not good for you. But this food that's rated 5 is really good for you. It has what you want for your body. It would seem to me like that online seller would be providing an incredibly good service to the community and would therefore be much more worthwhile to shop there than somebody who everybody knows is trying to trick you into buying something bad.
That's absolutely right. And implementing healthy retail strategies can help retailers have a competitive edge with customers. And that's because, as I mentioned earlier, people in the United States do want to eat healthy. They want to buy healthy food and they want to feed their families well.
And the Centers for the Science and Public Interest is helping them do it. We've run out of time, Emily, but thank you so much. Emily Snyder, Senior Policy Associate, Center for the Science and the Public Interest. Folks, remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.